Session number 27226, Reel 20.
Reel 20.
Right. We were aware of this submarine. We didn't know much about it, except an aeroplane on board. And it kept making visits to us particularly, and that's all we knew about it, except on one occasion. We do know that it was reports of some strange activity by something strange off the coast further down towards Durban, but wasn't really identified. So our interest in this was merely an aeroplane that kept coming over every so often, just obviously doing a recce. They knew, the Navy knew it was around, and we tried to get it by arming two Hurricanes with 500-hour depth charges, which were on standby every night when they expected this submarine to come round. Now, take that to its logical conclusion. The second time it came round, the RAF had been told, under no circumstances, if any unidentified aircraft came over Mombasa, there had to be no firing, nothing at all. And they disobeyed the rules, didn't they? And they came over, and we got a good fix on it. But it started firing at it. And he did what he usually did. He went back to his submarine. We don't know where he was. We got a trace, and then he obviously got right on the water, or very low down, and did a right or a left, back to the ship. And it was struck down, later we found, into a hangar on the deck, which was probably just hull down in the water, and it probably had folding wings anyway, floats, came on floats alongside, and they clamped the wings, closed the door, shut the door, and away. And it was rather like the Kingfisher that we had on the Silica. But this was what we were looking for in the main. That was the main job. Otherwise, it was any anti-submarine patrols up and down the coast. Target towing was the usual thing for the Navy. Any exercises for the ships that came in, long distance radar runs and that sort of thing. Pretty dull, pretty uninteresting, really. Good life for us. We lived ashore. We flew when we wanted to. Nobody fired anything at us in anger. We had one little nasty with target throwing, and the laddie involved got a notice, a little chit saying he was wanted a wound star, which he could wear on his arm, a little gold bar he could wear on his arm for being wounded. It's not in action in this particular case. But interesting aspect of target towing was we were flying and we towed a target for the ship. Target was streamed a long way away, probably 5,000 feet, very long tow, and a lot of wire. And to bring the drogue back, the air gunner in the back sets a propeller going on the outside of the aircraft, which turns the drum, which rhymes the wire in. And he does that so that winds the wire in. When the drogue's behind, he has a pair of wire cutters, cuts the wire so the drogue goes, and then wind the wire back in to the drum. Next trip, they put a new drogue, set it down below the aircraft for throwing, and it's set off. This particular time, he didn't get it wrong. The airplane got it wrong. The blade that drove, it's a four-bladed blade that drove the wire, snapped. And it snapped when the lad's finger was there, and he took one of his fingers off. He was just sitting there with an amputated finger. We then faced the problem, because first of all, he had to get the wire in, because the wire was still out there at its full length. He was in there without the thing with the finger short, and he'd only got the wire cutters to try and cut the wire. And the wire obviously came through a hole in the aircraft, and he was trying there, doing his best, with no finger, bleeding like a stuck pig. Tried to get over the wire with his wire cutters, and he lost it. And the wire cutters weren't over the wire, and they slipped through the hole and went into the Huggins. So we've now got an aircraft with one wounded lad with an amputated finger, in effect. And 5,000 feet of very, very heavy steel cable hanging behind. What do you do with that? And a drogue with it as well. We got away with it. The airfield itself was in a peninsula, and the end of the runway was really off the end. When you got to the end, it was like the tail end of a ship. We went into the water. And we flew over the airfield. The air gunner had sent a message saying that it is wounded, so they're waiting for him. So everything was down below, going panicky, wondering what was going to happen with the airplane with a 5,000 feet of cable behind, because they only got to touch someone in the neck and they'd lost the head. You know, it's quite, and so didn't know what to do. So I took the aircraft and set it out at full revs, and did a series of circles round the airfield, going lower and lower, in the hope that if I could get it low enough, I'd tear the drogue, and the drogue would come off, and it would break the cable somewhere along the line. And it did. The drogue came off, so that was part of the problem resolved, but it didn't break all the cable, it only broke it by the drogue. So we had to do a landing, and you know what a landing requires. It goes, go around the airfield, come back, and then you have a crosswind leg, and then come in, and you're turning, your airplane's turned this way, but this wire isn't turning with you, it's somewhere over there, you know, doing its own thing, coming back. And it was a bit of a problem, but we actually did it, and brought that, just a simple thing like drogue towing could be dangerous. Right, quite interesting thought, really. But the thing we had to do was take the drogue off, because if that, you know, was around, it could do a lot of mayhem when you're coming down through the circuit, because you've got to come through to low levels to get back to the airfield. So that was something that happened. That was drogue towing, anyway.
Was that done in a swordfish?
Pardon? That was in a swordfish, yes.
I'm quite interested in you mentioned the Hurricane's arm with the depth charges.
Yeah.
How did they handle as an aircraft?
Bloody awful. We never flew them. They were bloody ridiculous. But they would fly.
So they were purely on standby, were they?
They were on standby. Purely on standby. We had to sit in there on watch, 4 hours watches, just standing by for those aircraft to be called off when they got a warning they would come over.
I'm surprised the Hurricane could carry almost 2 depth charges.
Two depth charges, they would carry it. They were very, very sloppy in the air, that's for sure. Mm. But needs must when the level drives. But the point was that those depth charges, the submarine we're after, would not have touched it. They would have bounced off it. That was one of the things that we did. It was, we got a lot of flying with no hours to it at all, sitting in the bloody aircraft. But it was sad because when we could have got it, when the RAF, who were the ground crew in charge of the anti-aircraft, fired at it, he just dropped away straight away down onto the water, so it was out of the radar, and it could fly wherever it wanted to. So we lost him completely with no radar control over him. So but we had him 3 times, I think, during the course of the exercise, but we never got him. Just one of those things. One of the exercises, 2 of the boys went out in Hurricanes. It wasn't Mo Dunfield, no. Big lad he was, too. Big lad. In a Hurricane. 2 of them went off at an early morning flight in Hurricanes. And they were coming back, right on the water, low flying. And the one behind missed it, lost it. He went straight in a Hurricane. Now, to ditch a Hurricane is not too bad. It's not like a spit. It's not a bad aeroplane to ditch. But he went straight in. He broke his straps. Went into the water and got out with 2 broken legs. One of the things, picked up by two fishermen. He got out of a Hurricane going slap into the water, doing probably 150 miles an hour. Broke his straps and got out with his parachute and everything else, and was picked up by a native fisherman. They sent off a walrus to find him. They found him in the morning, in the boat, with his 2 broken legs, and brought him back. Funny old life, isn't it? Really, it is. quite unbelievable that, you know, a fellow can actually crash a hurricane straight into the, go straight in and survive.
Was the hurricane a robust aircraft?
Yes. It was. The Sea Fire was what a hurricane wasn't. The hurricane had a fabric back, of course, the back half, metalwork in the front. Very good airplane, very sound airplane to fly. Metal wings, of course, flew beautifully, but it wasn't as fast. It wasn't as nice in the air as a Spit. But the Spit on the ground was a little bugger. The hurricane would go down, sit down beautifully, no problem.
Any other duties that you were doing while you were...
Well, that was the anti-submarine business. I went up to... flew around quite a lot, really. Mainly up and down. Oh, the big story, of course. My big story was to deal with West Africa. The CO of the squadron...
The East Africa.
East Africa, yes, in Mombasa, was a 2.5 ringer, old wavy navy pilot brought in from Channel Airways. He was a bloody menace, but never mind. We hadn't been there very long. It's in the book. When we were told to go off to Nairobi to get an aircraft to fly to Khartoum to take us back to West Africa. I've told you the name of the place, in the Gold Coast. And we were to go up with the CO, with Jack Dyson, Shorty Kerr and myself, catch an aircraft to go and bring three rocket-firing swordfish back for this particular submarine that we're after, though we didn't know what a rocket could do, but a rocket would go through the pressure hull of this submarine. So the intelligence was right, but we weren't told. We didn't know about these things. To go back, to bring it back, three rocket swordery fire fish back from the Gold Coast. Now you go in an Anson from Mombasa to Nairobi, following the railway line all the way. You have the largest piece of rock in the world in Kenya, or it's in Tanzania actually, on your left hand side. You can't mistake it. It's called Kilimanjaro. This Channel Airways RNVR 2.5 ringer set off to go to Nairobi in a straightforward trip. In the front, driving his aircraft, with three of us in the back, couldn't care less. He set off, and the railway line, you followed. Now, it's straight all the way, but as part of the railway system, they'd built a special line, which was the economy of Kenya, really, to the Magadi Soda Lake, where you do a turn to the right and come back across yourself and go to the Soda Lake, which was these are the people who were driving the trains with the soda who killed our people in the water bowsers. And we're suddenly minding our own, it's a piece of the world, and the CO of the squadron came back to us and said, can you come and help me to identify this lake down below? Well, we got maps. We'd all got maps. We took our maps with us. And we're over at Lake Magadi, the Magadi Soda Lake. And there was another one, Lake Natron, which is a slightly bigger one. But you cannot fail to identify the Magadi Soda Lake anywhere in the world. Anybody from outer space landing near the Soda Lake would say we're at Magadi. Because, first of all, it's crystalline, so it shines like a doll on a three's backside. But also, it's got flamingos there, the pink ones, and they're flying around. If you fly over it, they fly around, and you know that it's Magadi Soda Lake, period. I think they might have some at Natron, but Magadi, you know. We told him that it was the Magadi Soda Lake. Now, that sets off a train reaction, because he thought that the mountain that we'd flown past was Mount Kenya. If you know your geography, you know where Kenya is, which is north northeast of Nairobi, I think, and that he was at the lake over there, which is it's Lake near Mount Kenya anyway, and he insisted that the only way to get back to Nairobi, because we were north of it, was to fly due south. We told him he was a prat, and we actually physically took control of him. When he was actually driving down at the other side of Kilimanjaro, when we said, the man's mad. And we went into the cockpit, took over from him. None of us ever had flown twins before, and said, stick him in the back, and we know where we are. Okay? I wasn't flying. It was, I think, Jack Dice was flying it, actually. Or maybe we had the skipper flying it for a while. But we told him that he was wrong, that if he continued to fly south, he'd end up in Durban, and we hadn't enough petrol. And we were flying behind Mount Kilimanjaro, having gone all the way up the lake, up there to the lake, and down here. I'll show you on the map, it's so obvious. And we were flying down behind Kilimanjaro, which he still insisted was Kenya. What do? Take him, physically manhandle him from the cockpit, and fly south of Kilimanjaro till he hit the railway line again. Then we have a problem. Which way do you go? We know there's an airfield called Voi, but it's very near to where we are, but you can't see it. So we did a left, and we followed the railway line. We found Voi, running out of petrol, turned round, landed, and left it. Now, Voi was an airfield. It had a forest ranger there, lived in a house not very far from the lakes that were there, and he heard us flying over, came, picked us up, and took us back home to his house. And we had flown an aircraft all the way around Kilimanjaro back to the railway. We've now got an airfield. We're now an aeroplane, no communication with anybody because the railway line shot down for its telephone overnight, and we had to spend the night over there. Click this. We were in a bit of a trouble because the squadron had gone on fire alert. They went out flying. Well, everybody was all around trying to find the swordfish. We've got three pilots, the only ones who could probably go from there and bring three swordfish back. And there was all hell let loose, and we couldn't start the aircraft again. When it washed out one of the pots on one of the twin engine things on the Anson, and he was it was a winder, wasn't it? I think. Anyway, the CO couldn't start it again, so we left there with nothing to do. And it was only when one of the boys were flying around by Voi, somebody found out that we're there. And they stopped the search for us and said we had to get back. Now, how we got back, I don't remember. And I don't think we flew back, because it would have been in my things. I think we must have gotten the train at Voi. But that's strange, I don't remember this. I don't remember this at all. I've no memory of it at all. We stayed the night with the hunter. Quite an interesting place. Things made of elephants, tusks and feet and that sort of thing. And we must have gone back to... must have gone back to Nairobi. Into the mess there, because there was an incident at the time where... we'll tell this story in the same context. It might have been out of sync. No, I think it's in the right sync. We must have gone back to Nairobi to the mess because there was a captain there. What about Christmas time? Dinner time? Christmas dinner, I think it was. And he had an urgent call to go back to Mombasa, to be flown back to Mombasa. And the only person available was the pilot who worked in the air repair yard in Nairobi, who was a petty officer pilot, who'd been Christmas, it must have been Christmas, because he was pissed out of his mind, and he had to go back to Mombasa urgently, obviously in relation to this submarine that was going around, though we didn't know this at the time. And they said that this PO pilot had to take him back in a Swordfish from Nairobi straight away. Now, he's not a well boy when he's put him in the aircraft. There's another story about Nairobi in a minute. But he set off with his captain in back. And he set off to Mombasa, which is about, what, 4 hours flying away, I think. It's a hell of a long way in a Swordfish anyway. And he flew around for about 3.5-4 hours and landed back where? Nairobi. He was immediately demobbed straight away, sent straight home. And that captain was very angry. He was not a very pleased boy at all. There was a hell of a row about it later on, apparently. I know nothing at all about it. But that bloke had flown all the way around Nairobi and come back and landed on the bloody airfield. So, just to put the thing in proper sync, I'd been at Port Reitz for some time, which I have to deal with later on, and we're now talking about the actual start of the trip to go across back to get the rocket fire and Swordfish in West Africa. And it was on September the 14th, August the 27th, I'd flown Fulmer, McKinnon Road to Nairobi, and I stayed there until September the 14th, obviously on some sort of leave at that time. And I flew back my own Fulmer again. It's the same number. No, there's a different number Fulmer. I flew a different Fulmer back from Nairobi to Port Reitz to join the squadron again in Port Reitz. It's a bit out of sync. Anyway, we did that trip in the Anson, and that was on the 15th of September. And so we were into we got back after that horrendous experience somehow. September the 15th we flew up there. September the 16th we must have been up at then on September the 16th, that's the next day, I was flown in a Fulmer with myself. Oh, who knows? I was flown in a Fulmer to send a Fulmer up from Nairobi with a pilot in Richmond to pick us up in Nairobi to take us back to some sort of civilization. I went back to Nairobi, and the next day I picked up a Swordfish in Nairobi and flew it did a test in it, and then I flew it from there with another pilot at 10,000 feet for some reason, maybe an AS or... Yes, 2 hours 40 minutes on the 17th. I did an ASV test in 165 with a leading Adam Sanson. It was me doing the test to see it was okay. And then I flew it from the air repair yard in Nairobi back to Port Reitz. So that's how I got back. A Fulmer came in to pick us up from somewhere, take me back to Nairobi, got in the Fulmer, got back again. Bit of a mishmash, but had to go back, and it didn't take... No. I took all the other two back in a Fulmer to McKinnon Road and then to Nairobi. The whole thing is a little...
So what happened to the CO actually after you returned?
As far as I know, he disappeared. He was replaced immediately by a man called Ansell, Jackie Ansell. Oh no, we had a... Oh, McPherson took over the squadron for a little while, and then Jackie Anson took it over a little after. 7th and 16th. Brrr. Tanga Tanga Kias. Yeah.
So when did you actually make the ferry flight that you went up to
I made it. I made it. This was in September, and we came back and we arrived back at Christmas time.
So how did the ferry flight go from there? Obviously, the one that you had to make.
No, well, that was cancelled completely and utterly.
Completely cancelled.
Yes, we were going to fly up in civil aircraft in an American Liberator, I think. Up to Khartoum, but that was cancelled completely. As far as we knew, that trip was washed out completely. We didn't even know what it was. We were just told that we were going up there to go there to prevent somewhere else to bring some swordfish back. Period. No briefing. No briefing at all at that stage. We didn't know what it was all about. When we got to Nairobi and we set off from Nairobi, we knew what was happening, because at that time we had somebody for intelligence anyway who was briefing this Italian pilot who'd done the trip to Addis Ababa, which I told you about earlier on. So it's all a little bit confused in this narrative, but because I couldn't remember how we got back. I mean, we were picked up by somebody picked up an airplane, took us to Nairobi, which is just up the road, said go and get an aircraft from the repair yard and take it down to Mombasa, which duly did. And so the three of us who were going to fly the aircraft flew back to Mombasa, and I'm afraid the CEO of the squadron disappeared. The rest is silence, as they say. So that takes us really to that story of the pilot. Now, I was not there long enough for this particular petty officer pilot to be there, and it all happened around Christmas time. I got back to Nairobi at Christmas, having done the reinforcement run, and this is where the pilot, after the Christmas dinner, went and wandered around all over the world and came back to Nairobi and made somebody very angry. I gather it was because I gather at that Christmas time the submarine came while we were back. And with the rocket fire and swordfish, the submarine had actually come around that time. I think it had. We'd missed the boat completely. Later on, we had another go at it. But it's difficult to, looking back in time, to encapsulate what is a relatively small period of time, probably a fortnight or 3 weeks, into a series of incidents which are quite individual and they're quite memorable, you know. Anyway, is that okay?